This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
On today's property show, we again talk to Chris Tan from Chur Associates for our monthly property legal clinic. BFM listener Uma Sundram talks to Keith Kam about issues he has had following the purchase of his apartment unit.
So I received a letter for transfer of vacant possession in August, but the loan had not been fully disbursed. So in other words, the developer will not hand over the keys. But at the same time, they're saying that within 14 days, if you do not respond to the letter, then the vacant possession would have been deemed to have been transferred and all charges will then kick in. And what actually happened was they backcharged me for maintenance and sinking fund since July. So by the time when I actually collected the keys in the middle of November, I had to pay about almost 5,000 in maintenance and sinking fund, which they refused to refund. Up until maybe 2 weeks ago, they refunded a little over 1,000 ringgit. They're standing by the letter saying that once we've issued the letter, after 14 days you don't respond, then the charges kick in. What I would like to know is, I mean, it doesn't make sense because it's a catch-22. They issued the letter, but at the same time they won't release the keys because the loan has not been fully disbursed, so they have not been paid. How can they do that?
All right, Chris, with our listener's problem, what is the matter behind all this?
Now, from the listener's problems, what we can gather here is that there is a vacant possession notice instead of transfer of vacant possession in August. And what happened is that as a result of that, there's a deeming position under a vacant possession notice, mm-hmm. right? And this is, I'm assuming that this is a residential property because the deeming provision is similar, whereby after 14 days, if you receive the notice, it is deemed that it's delivered to you. So the unit is ready and they give you a notice to say, come and pick it up, right? The key. And if you don't come and pick it up after 14 days, it's deemed that I've already given you the key. So as a result of that, then your service charges, maintenance, sinking fund, your liability to pay those things start from after 14 days. So regardless of whether you have actual possession or not. Okay, and the complication here is because there is also an issue whereby the listener loan has not been disbursed.
Yes.
So even if you issue me the notice to take vacant possession, one of the conditions to take vacant possession from the purchaser side, which is the listener, is to actually pay up full payment.
Yes.
And including any other payment, including, for example, even deposit for your service charges and your sinking fund.
Yes.
You know, so I also gather that this is a strata development from the way that he put forward the questions. So in that sense, so because there's service charge and sinking fund, those could be only be a strata. So what I'm highlighting here is that I think the predicament of the purchaser or listener in this case, he as he put it as a catch-22, I rather say that it's not. It's because you probably don't understand the concept a little bit clearer. So the idea is very simple. You got a notice for vacant possession, but it is your duty to ensure that your bank disperses all your loan in time so that you can claim vacant possession.
Oh, it is our duty to make sure the bank...
Yes. Yes, you have to understand the agreement is between you and the developer.
Yes.
So think about it. There's only two parts. There's bank is not part of that agreement, yes, isn't it?
Yes.
Right? So for all intents and purposes, then if you want to allocate duty, payment is whose duty? Must be the purchaser's duty, right?
Yeah.
So if you take your purchase price from bank financing, therefore, it is the duty of the purchaser to ensure that the bank disperses money on time. It could be some complication somewhere whereby there's lack of documentation, someone forget to advise somewhere, or certain condition not satisfied, or some delay even from the bank. But in the allocation of duty and responsibility in the agreement between the purchaser and the developer, it cannot be the developer to make sure that the bank pay money. It has to be purchaser.
It's not really uncommon because I think a lot of people are not aware of this.
Yeah.
I have come across issues where I'm wondering why a certain portion of the payment has not been disbursed by
sure.
the bank.
Sure.
And I would chase the developer for it.
Sure. Now, think about it. Let's put it this way. You have to understand, I mean, in contract or in law, everyone must understand this thing called privity of contract.
All right.
So who is the contracting party? Therefore, within the contracting party, they have... then allocate the responsibility clearly between that two party only.
Correct.
So if bank is not a party to that, then no. So in this case, you have two contracts. Mm-hmm. One contract is with the developers. So therefore, there's one that between you and the developer, correct? And there's one between you and the bank.
Yes.
So you are sort of like bridging the whole obligation on that. So what the bank supposed to perform should be your obligation towards the developer. And then, of course, if really we found if there's a delay from the bank, if you can attribute the whole delay due to them and whatnot, then you can claim against the bank pursuant to your the other contract, right, and not the first contract as a result of what you suffer from the contract with the developer.
So from what you've heard here, is it clear if anyone in particular is at fault, whether it's the developer or the bank or the purchaser?
I think, let's put it this way, it's clear to me the purchaser is at fault here for a start because, it, like I said, the distribution of responsibility here is that if your bank did not disburse the loan, it's the purchaser's problem.
Right.
And then the purchaser would have, at that time, follow up with the bank, find out what's the reason of the late disbursement, because in his case, he only managed to get the key in the middle of November. So I suppose that probably is the time where the bank paid the money. So from August to November, what happened in between? So is it the purchaser's fault of not providing enough documentation, enough security, or enough whatever condition that he have to fulfill? Or plain, there is a delay on perhaps even the bank lawyer advising the bank, or even the bank themselves in processing the claim, there's some delay. Or could it be an attributable to whatever certificate or whatnot that they need from the developer? Then we can go back to the developer. But on the face of it, it must be the purchaser. But if we go to the detail, then we can allocate again some of this responsibility either to the developer or the banker.
So what is the listener's avenue to resolve this matter now?
I think, let's put it this way, in order to claim the vacant possession, you have to actually discharge all the payment obligation until it is done, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think coming from this question, the one thing is that number one, his problem is on number one, on the back charge, because apparently the developer back charged him on the maintenance sinking fund since July, which is a little bit strange because to me is, if it's since July, then the notice is only in August. How can it be from July? Right. It has to be from August or 14 days after the notice in August, correct? So that's something that he need to find out. Then the other thing is that the listener also did not actually tell too much information about refund.
Yeah,
he did mention that, you know, I had to pay about almost 5,000 in maintenance. So first of all, I'm not sure whether that's accurate according to what you have agreed to pay, as in the per share unit per square feet basis that you have agreed to pay earlier. All right. And then number two is that then they did, and then the listener did mention about refund over $1,000. So I don't know whether that refund is to cover that overcharge perhaps for July. I don't know. So we need to look at more details. Like I said, in this case, I think first and foremost, you have to allocate whether it is your fault or is it whose fault that caused the delay in the bank.
All right, so if it's discovered that the bank had been delinquent in disbursing the loan on time, is there some sort of compensation the purchaser can seek from the bank?
We have to look at the contract again to advise. So like every contract, there is none, all right?
Mm-hmm.
And there's difference as well, and the standard contract by the bank. So I suppose you really have to look very hard into it, all right? But in any event, that's why I say as a purchaser, it is also your duty to ensure that, you know, your bank is disbursed on time so that you're safe from all your obligation.
The fact that it's a standard contract from the bank,
right,
does it give the purchaser or the person who takes the loan much room to seek compensation if something like this happens?
I was suggesting that the room was very little. The gap is very small. But I'm just saying that in any event, there is still a regulatory body to all the bank in terms of their practices, which is our central bank anyway. So I'm saying that, you know, if it's not professional, although contractually it's prohibited and whatnot, yeah, then you can still lodge a proper complaint to ensure that all bank complies with the regulatory expectation, including complying with the SPA and all these things. So I'm just saying that we have to look at it clearly. And what it means is that to me, as far as I'm concerned, this case is purely just to understand whose obligation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a question of catch 22 because really there's no 22 in this sense. It's actually you against the developer. So once we know that the obligation to ensure the bank to make payment is the duty of the purchaser, I suppose it's very clear.
When we come back, we'll find out what Chris Tan from Chur Associates has to say about Umar's questions with regards to the maintenance charges at his condominium complex. BFM 89.9. The Property Show on BFM 89.9 continues with our conversation with Chris Tan from Chur Associates, responding to BFM listener Uma Sundram's next question.
This is Indamitra Padana. One is about, say, 13 years old, and for that parcel, they are paying 18 cents per square foot. Now, for the newer parcel, we are paying about 28 cents. So they have had a AGM recently, which they raised this concern, they are supposed to come up with a resolution, but to date they have not. So basically the huge difference are 10 cents per square foot between parcel A and parcel B. And we are sharing the same facility, so there is no reason for us to be paying the additional 10 cents.
All right, Chris, if you have a 1,000 square foot unit, that's a 100 ringgit difference. That's 1,200 ringgit a year. How unusual is this? I mean, it's a very significant amount.
No, it's not about the amount. It's first of all unusual to actually have two rate of service charge on two development.
Mm-hmm.
Because in this case, we're talking about the same development. I would think that it's the same strata development. Therefore, there's two blocks. One is parcel A, parcel B.
Yes.
And if really there is no separation as to what we call a limited common property, if the common property is assessed for all, there's no reason there should be a different rate. Okay, so what I think the listener have to find out here is that what is the basis of charging the 100 ringgit difference? And to me, even if there is a basis, unless it's legally permitted, then it cannot be that case. But let's put it this way, there is differences as to how we can charge for service charge contribution under the new Act. So the idea is that previously we all very used to the idea of per square feet. You know, how much you pay per square foot, and therefore what you do is per square foot times how many cents per square foot, and then you get whatever answer is that. But there is also a new way of calculation right now. This will no longer work. We go on a very complicated concept called share unit. Right? So share unit concept is a technical term. So it's not easy for the owner to find out, but you can actually find out from looking at your title. Right, so once your strata title is out, they'll put how many share unit is your property.
What does that mean?
Share unit is actually a weightage kind of concept that give weight based on the actual parcel that you occupy.
Right.
And also the weight to the accessory parcel that you own, say the car park, and therefore come up with the weightage times whatever per share unit in terms of the rate.
It sounds like it's something to just confuse house buyers.
No, it's not going to confuse house buyers, because the thing is that the share unit determine the assess and also a share of the common property. So under the law, what they are trying to do is that this will actually be more fair, because last time when we do per square feet, it did not actually account for accessory parcel. So which means your car park. So let's say your unit come with more car park and my unit come with less car park, and our unit are the same.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of size. Now, what we contribute is also based on the same, right? So you pay 1,000, I'm still paying 1,000. But I have 5 car park, you have 1.
Yeah, right? That would not be fair.
That would not be fair. So when we have this share unit concept, mm-hmm. which we give weightage to also accessory parcel. And this weightage is also important. That also means that if we need to go for AGM election, your voting also based on share unit, if you go on poll basis. So which means that if I contribute more, I should be having more say, slightly more say in that sense. So this is trying to even out to make sure to improve our own strata regime. To me, first and foremost, it's unusual.
Mm-hmm.
All right? So we have to find out what's the basis of the difference. Unless you tell me that there is a share unit difference between parcel A and parcel B. Therefore, one of the parcel need to pay higher. So I'm still not discounting the fact that there could be a chance that there is a difference. Right, but I'm saying that it's unusual.
When did this shared unit concept come into force?
Oh, this is through the introduction of the Strata Management Act that come in. And they have changed the basis. The Strata Management Act was effectively, I think, 1 year, 2 years ago, June of 2014.
So now the listener is going to resort to the Joint Management Committee to try and resolve this. What is the role of the Joint Management Committee?
This is interesting, because when he used the word Joint Management Committee, it is suggested to me that the title is not out. What it means is that it's not possible. For another possibility to explain this in parcel A and parcel B different is the concept of what we call limited common property permitted under the new law. So what it means is parcel A will have their own limited common property. Parcel B would have their own limited common property. And then beyond these two, there will be common where everyone use.
Okay.
Okay. So there could be a difference simply because parcel B will have more facility compared to parcel A, for example. So in that case, therefore, your contribution will be higher, yes or no?
True.
But then this question, by asking me Joint Management Committee, then in fact, you are negating the I know the answer to that question already. First and foremost, there would be no limited common property during the Joint Management Committee time.
Mm-hmm.
It can only happen after the title is issued. So when the title is issued, then we have Management Corporation, and it's no longer Joint Management Committee in that sense. So in that case, I can gather that the title is not out, there's no LCP. So therefore, I can discount that possibility. So the only possibility now that we want to see is that whether in the submission for the strata title, Because necessarily when you submit for the strata title, you have to then put in a schedule to indicate what is the allocated share unit for each of the unit.
Okay.
So remember the share unit concept, we have weightage for this and weightage for that. So they must have that. So according to that submission, maybe there's difference. I don't know.
Coming back to the Joint Management Committee and the Management Corporation, how are the roles different?
They are the same. Effectively, it's a different time frame. Let's understand. I think just give everyone a proper concept. The idea is very simple. When you hand over the unit, the person who manages the common property is the developer.
All right.
Okay. And within 12 months after handing over, right, they will have to form what we call Joint Management Committee or Joint Management Body, JMB, to take over. When you say the joint word means it's jointly between developer and the owner. It's like a transit phase, you know? And then what happened is that until and unless the strata title is out, then you form what we call a management corp where the developer is totally out of the picture.
But the management office in a strata title in a condominium, for example, they would then become employees of the management corporation rather than the developer.
Yes.
That's
the case.
Right.
So it's under their payroll.
Now, fixing of maintenance fees, they are usually decided when the property is bought, right? So what right does the homeowner have then if everything has been signed on the dotted line already?
So the answer is yes and no. Let's put it this way. Fixing of maintenance usually decided when the property is bought is normally fixed for a year.
Yes.
And what happens at the moment you have another body come and take over, remember, developer was managing for a year.
Yeah.
And then after that, you have the JMB come.
Yeah.
Come to life, yes or not? Then the JMB have to decide.
Or the new
rate.
Whether it's
correct. So it cannot be perpetuated. All right. And then when the MC come again, then the MC decide. And then every year during the annual general meeting, again, all of them can decide based on the budget for the next year.
Would they decide based on the shared unit concept or?
They're based on shared unit concept. So what we do is, like, for example, we gather that, let's say we get all the quotation up, we feel that next year, 2018, the whole year, we need 1 million to manage the common property for the entire development. All right. So then we divide by the total share unit of the entire development. So what exactly is the total share unit?
So you pay this much, I pay this much.
So once we find out per share unit how much, then we look at how much share unit your unit actually been allocated. So at that, then you pay that much and we pay that much. That's how the whole allocation starts.
The listener is not happy about why he has to pay a different amount compared to his neighbouring block. Is there anything that he can legally do, either on his own or collectively with the other residents?
Two things. Number one is that, of course, seek the justification from the management committee, whoever is actually managing, either developer, either JMC or MC, whatever that is, and then can bring this case to even the AGM. Very importantly, I would advise the listener to next time do participate in AGM so you understand the whole basis clearer. Let's put it this way, it's actually a self-managed system. The whole kampong is responsible for the management of the kampong. If you don't attend, most of the time you are not actually aware of the basis of the collection. Give a good attempt to understand how it's done. And if you are not happy, bring it to the attention of the management committee. And if it's only you and whatnot, then another venue that you could actually seek for direction and guidance is the Strata Management Tribunal. The fee is quite low, no lawyers required. So just put forward your case and say how you feel that it's not just.
So the take-home message is to take active part in where you live, participate in property management meetings and get your views heard.
That was Keith Kam speaking with Chris Tan from Chur Associates on our monthly property legal clinic. You can catch the conversation on podcast by downloading the BFM app on Google Play and the Apple App Store. If you have any legal questions regarding your real estate investment, do write in to property@bfm.my. BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.